Running a medical association comes with many challenges. Today's guest confronts these challenges head-on while leading this community with advocacy in an ever-changing world.
Participate, engage, speak out, use your voice to be an effective advocate. The Voices in Advocacy podcast examines the diverse landscape of advocacy, exploring the ins and outs of building influence, driving change, and creating champion advocates. It's now time for the Voices in Advocacy podcast with your host, Roger Rickard.
Hello and welcome to season 5 of the Voices in Advocacy podcast. I'm Roger Rickard, president and founder of Voices in Advocacy, where we work with organizations to inspire, educate, engage, and activate your supporters by turning them into effective, influential advocates. And this is the podcast dedicated to the art of advocacy. This podcast is for the people that work and engage in advocacy efforts. Now, let's get started. On today's show, we speak with Adam Levy, CAE, who is the executive director of the American Cleft Palate Cranial Facial Association. Now that's a mouthful. Adam has an extensive association background. Since 2020, Adam has led the American Cleft Palate Cranial Facial Association, known as ACPA, which is the premier scientific resource and interdisciplinary professional network for healthcare providers serving patients with cleft lip, cleft palate, and cranial facial differences. Prior to this position, Adam served as the Deputy Executive Director for the American College of Osteopathic Emergency Physicians Association. He sits on the Small Staff Association's Advisory Committee for ASAE, the Center for Association Leadership, and is a board member for the Association Executives of North Carolina. In 2022, Adam earned his CAE, the Certified Association Executive designation from ASAE. Also in 2022, Adam was the recipient of the Association Forum 40 Under 40 Award. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to welcome Adam to today's show. Welcome, sir.
Thank you so much, Roger. What a kind introduction. I have a smile on my face because of all of those nice things you said about me, and I appreciate such a warm welcome.
Well, it's a pleasure. And maybe in the interest of full disclosure, we know each other kind of quite well as we work together on advocacy efforts for ACPA.
We do. And as many things as you just said about me, we have been the recipients of so much of your amazing knowledge and experience, and it's been really a pleasure to work with you and has benefited ACPA and all of our members and certainly our patients and families as well through our work together. So grateful to have come across you in this world and glad to be working together.
Well, thank you very much, Adam. And boy, that should just do the show. We should just stop right there.
Great. It's great talking to you. I'll see you later.
Now, Adam, you joined ACPA in 2020 and almost immediately began a strategic planning review and process leading to your current strategic plan. Why was this step so important to ACPA and your involvement from the get-go?
Yeah, you know, I came in at such a unique time in our literal world, right? We were sort of mid-pandemic still. I think from an executive perspective, you know, myself and certainly people in comparable roles were examining all of those questions, like what does our world look like now? What will it look like? The assumption that we would exit that status, you know, in the world. And, you know, the terms back then were remaining nimble, removing red tape, being prepared. You know, we are changing governance structures in terms of how quickly decisions could be made, moving funds around, really the ability to be more proactive and less reactive. Part of that proactivity was having a really solid strategic plan in place that allowed us to see what our future looked like, regardless of if we were working from home or if we were, you know, back to meetings and whatever the world looked like. We knew that our mission and our vision needed to serve the cleft and craniofacial community, and having a good plan in place, which still allowed us to be nimble and flexible and make changes as we went, could still get done. So that's exactly what we set out to do. Really proud of how much we've advanced that strategic plan here as we finish up the third and final year at the end of 2024.
So what are the three main pillars of that strategic plan?
Yeah, so we technically have quite a few areas. I would say, where we really focus is probably excellence in innovation and education, collaboration, networking and connection, and communication and advocacy. We do have other areas, including research and advancing diversity, equity, inclusion. And these are things that we consider to be kind of foundational. In our organization, which is multidisciplinary, equity and inclusion and certainly diversity are, kind of have multiple meetings for us. So that's something we kind of build in everywhere. And, these other areas have really created so much impact for us. So obviously having communication and advocacy as one of those main focuses has really opened up the door widely to all of our work here, to partnerships, to really getting our name out into the world.
So you mentioned partnerships with organizations that have similar goals. Why do you think that's important?
So I think we discovered early on in this planning process, I was pretty new to the organization still, and I was, myself learning the ins and outs of the cleft and craniofacial world. And for us, what that means is there are clinical, membership societies who focus in some capacity in this niche of healthcare. So that's going to be the big organizations are like the American Society of Plastic Surgery or ASHA, which is speech language, orthodontists, things of that nature. And the thing is these are massive organizations. So we have smaller groups within that, many of whom are members of ACPA who focus in cleft and craniofacial care. Kind of in parallel to that are patient advocacy organizations or other charities. So these are going to be groups that go overseas and do, charitable work in the surgical realm. These are going to be groups here like Children's Craniofacial Association or MyFace, who are really patient support or patient advocacy organizations, but they're not membership organizations. So one of the things I discovered early on is that I really like to start using the word complementary. So ACPA is very complementary and vice versa in terms of working with these organizations. We have clinical members like kind of a typical 501c6 membership organization. And the patient advocacy, patient support organizations are mostly patients and their families. Our mission is very, kind of charitably driven to some extent. We are a 501c3, even as a membership organization. So to be successful, we found that as much as we complement each other, we have to work together. And that's really been a big part of this strategic plan. And we've really forged some pretty excellent and meaningful relationships, more than just a handshake or a hello, really some defined agreements and MOUs and how we'll work together to further care for patients and families.
Yeah, and it's interesting because to care for people that have cleft palate and lip and craniofacial, you've got a lot of different medical disciplines that are attached to that. You mentioned a few, but they're in the neighborhood of what, 10, 12 different disciplines?
Even more than that, yeah. We I think say something like 24 or 26 when it comes down to the membership types we have, even if the majority are yes, within those kind of maybe 8, 10, 12 buckets.
Yeah, exactly. And so the diversity of that puts you in a kind of a unique position that you're really focused on a given area.
Absolutely. I think from a collaboration standpoint and a communication standpoint, we know we can't get an entire massive sort of parent organization to be super involved with us. Plastic surgeons, orthodontists, speech, dentists, social workers, nurses, the list goes on. There's thousands, hundreds of thousands of these providers. So our goal is to really just foster those connections so they're aware of what we're doing. So we know who kind of the major players are in their organizations. I've forged some nice introductory relationships with other chief staff executives within these organizations. So there's kind of an open door both ways. And occasionally we do overlap in needs. Occasionally everyone kind of unifies behind certain things, especially when it comes to advocacy. So although it doesn't always happen because we are so specialized, having those open door policies and those connections and those warm conversations is very different than just saying we know who people are.
Right. and being aware, I think, is a big key there. So speaking of that, what are the top 2024 advocacy priorities that you're working on right now?
So, in working with our advocacy committee and of course with you and your company, Roger, we have over time developed those priorities. And I'll just say briefly, again, because we're a clinical society, membership society, we have advocacy goals that are more, you could call them like legislatively driven, even though we don't lobby, obviously, as a 501c3. But we also know via our strategic plan that patients and their families need to be able to advocate for themselves, both with our own members and giving them those tools and those resources and the knowledge to, make sure they're getting the best care possible, but also to kind of advocate for something that's really special to us, which is approved teams. So ACP has over 200 approved teams, right around 200 approved teams in the U.S. and Canada, and
So
really what
explain,
the
Adam, let me jump in here for a second
Yeah,
and
please.
explain what teams are for those that might not be aware.
Yeah, no, I definitely need to do that. So our model is team care, and while we don't accredit, individual providers or types of care, we do approve teams that have to meet the criteria of our parameters and standards of care. In a nutshell, this really means that comprehensive cleft and craniofacial care is provided with the best possible outcomes by a team of providers. So, a plastic surgeon and an orthodontist and a speech pathologist are the core of a team. Those are required to be an approved team, but we know that many more providers come into play in terms of a individual's long care journey. By working closely together, by sharing information, by meeting during specific cleft or craniofacial clinic days, information about these patients can be shared, especially in disciplines that aren't in the same area. So, somebody might be an otolaryngologist in a hospital-based system, and they're meeting in a clinic with a dentist who has no access to that same electronic health record or, what's going on behind the scenes in the hospital. But by sharing information about that patient, perhaps information from a speech pathologist about how well they're doing with certain swallowing issues, feeding issues, their development of a certain muscle, something in their ear, the plastic surgeon might then delay a certain procedure or surgery, knowing that the patient might need more development work, something of that nature. It's really a pretty amazing a model, and it's changed cleft and craniofacial care as a whole. It's really something that's been adopted worldwide as well by organizations who are in the structured as ACPA.
Yeah, and so they work hand in hand with each other to provide the best care and to make it
Yes.
easy on the patient and the family because they try to coordinate this within a day so that when you come in, you spend like all day together, correct?
Spot on. That's exactly it. It really accomplishes a lot for both the providers and the patients and their families. And it's not an easy thing being a patient and a family in this area. Many patients have many, many surgeries. We certainly have people who come from various socioeconomic statuses who cross state lines to get the best possible care, or maybe they moved, but they want to still see the person who did their first procedure or who's helping them with another type of care. So it is definitely a kind of a complicated area. And these are certainly things that have carried over into more of that legislative side in terms of where we're trying to advocate and get behind.
Yeah, sure. And you mentioned out of state care. That naturally is one of those areas that trying to make sure that a child that might be out of state getting care in another state doesn't have to walk through different hoops for different states along the way.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it is a fairly common thing in craniofacial care, cleft and craniofacial care. So you had asked before, one of the three items that we're really focused on this year is the idea of access to out-of-state health care. And again, there are such a wide variety of reasons why that could be the case. The easiest example I like to give is, a family who perhaps lives in northern North Carolina, where there's not a let's say Northwest North Carolina, there's not a nearby cleft or craniofacial team approved by ACPA, but there is an hour north in Fairfax, in Virginia, let's say. So, instead of driving 4 hours east, and I'm getting my geography wrong, but instead of driving 4 hours east to, let's say Chapel Hill, that person can drive 1 hour. And let's say they're socioeconomically disadvantaged. they like it could be a single parent. I mean, there's a number of things that could come into play why that 1 hour drive is a whole lot different than a 4 hour drive. By not being denied coverage by crossing state lines is a world of difference. People aren't able to do so.
Yeah, and when you look at the geography, I mean, you look at how close Delaware and New Jersey and Pennsylvania and exactly. Maryland and DC and Virginia, all those states are, it makes a huge difference if you can cross over, because you may be literally a mile away from one, but it might be in another state.
It's so true with those states. These are all just such significant examples, whether you're in those grouped together states or you're in a really rural area where access to care is even less, right? The example still applies. What I love about this concept is that it ties back to our strategic plan as a whole, as an organization, with the idea of collaboration and networking. Roger, you and I have been in touch with the Children's Hospital Association, which is really not that old of an organization itself. And we've kind of joined on to one of their major pieces of legislation that they're pushing and advocating for. And, that kind of thing is not something we were doing before. It's not directly related to cleft and craniofacial care in the sense of a bill that says those words, but just inherently, it's exactly what many of our patients and their families face. So by forging these connections, by being a part of those conversations, we know it's a long game. We know it's not something that's happening overnight. We know a government has a pretty high amount of dysfunction right now in terms of getting some of these things done. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't stand behind them and really keep pushing those agendas forward. And quite frankly, even the fact that our members and our community is more aware of these things, it just means that steps are being moved, are being taken forward. That's all we can do, is try to move forward.
And you said something earlier about being a 501c3, yes, and advocating. For 501c3s, the big difference is you're allowed to advocate for issues, you're allowed to educate, you're allowed to go speak, you're allowed to go talk to your government, but what you're not allowed to do is be political. You're not allowed to have a political action committee, give to a party, give to a candidate, endorse a candidate, those kind of things. And there's a clear, distinct line between those two elements. So reaching out and supporting other legislation, collaborating with other associations and like-minded groups is absolutely perfectly appropriate, and I would say probably a must. So with that, though, because you talk an awful lot about what your organization does for parents and for the patients, personal storytelling is a really important component to advocacy messaging. How do you capture those personal stories?
Yeah, I love that question. I think this ties into that concept that we're a membership society made up of providers. And while we do have some members providers in different disciplines who are, as we say, affected individuals, this might be, let's say, somebody who was born with a cleft lip and they decided to go to dental school because they were they felt so strongly about being a part of that community and on the professional side. That is, we're very lucky to have those individuals, but it's not the majority. So as I like to say, I can talk about this subject, to the moon and back, but I'm not directly impacted by a cleft or craniofacial condition. The voices of those affected by these conditions are really the strongest in the room, without a doubt. I can leave a room, a conversation, whatever it might be, as myself and continue my day. People impacted by cleft and craniofacial differences can't leave their difference.
That's right.
They walk around with what they have all day, just like anybody who's impacted by some sort of, difference or disease or condition or anything like that. So we have certainly put a focus on trying to amplify the voices of those affected. A lot of the time, we know that we're working with young individuals who don't have that voice to use. So we certainly want to amplify the voice of their parents. And that's why we use those terms so often, patients and parents, or patients and families. One thing I'm really proud of as it pertains to a sort of a second, maybe even the most important area of our 2024 advocacy agenda, has been the support of the Ensuring Lasting Smiles Act, or ELSA, which is something that we've worked closely with the National Foundation of Ectodermal Dysplasias on. They've really led that charge from the beginning. And we kind of came on board and said, you know, that organization and others who support it are wonderful, kind of incredibly motivated patient advocacy organizations. And they have the support in general from like sign-on letters of other clinical organizations, but there's no group like ACPA that fits into that model of that all of our members fit into the craniofacial space. So, you know, the other organizations have a specific goal. So American Dental might support that bill, but American Dental is American Dental. Plastic surgeons are still plastic surgeons. ACPA is comprised of all of these different groups.
That's right.
And we said, why are we not doing more? So we really stepped it up with NFED, with the other organizations that have been a part of that. We supported an advocacy day on the Hill earlier this year. I'm sorry, late last year. God, it's 2024. I was really proud that we were, you know, in that room representing the provider side, but ensuring that with our voice and our dollars and our energy that we are supporting the voices, being in Washington, D.C., meeting with legislators directly and making sure that those were the voices that were amplified, even as we know we kind of stand behind them.
Yeah, absolutely. And that type of collaboration and working in coalition and partnership with others is definitely a key action. Speaking of kind of advocacy actions, awareness we know is one of those. Is there a week, a month that is dedicated to PLEF awareness?
We do have the National Craniofacial Awareness Month, which is in July. We always like to see, you know, how many organizations can come on board for that. It's something that we don't really tend to take credit for per se. It's not like it's ACPA's month. It's actually the opposite. It's kind of now no one's branded month, but we're happy about that. You know, there's a long history behind where it started. You know, we're a selfless organization. It's not about ACPA. So we're really happy to see all those efforts going out the door in July, raising awareness about cleft and craniofacial conditions, trying to reduce the stigma of those conditions. Certainly they come with plenty of difficulties from a financial standpoint. As children get older, there are issues like bullying and self-esteem. There's such a number of things that we know can get better for these affected individuals. We're really proud to stand behind those efforts. And again, we consider that a form of advocacy on behalf of those patients and families, even if it's not legislative.
What's the first word that comes to mind when you think of the word advocacy?
Good question, Roger. I feel like I should have a faster answer for this. I'll cheat and instead of saying one word. I'll use two words and I'll say standing behind. That's how I like to think about it. I feel like in advocacy, you stand behind something that you are passionate about. You stand behind people who deserve to be advocated for. I really, you know, believe in standing behind something with others as well. So that's kind of the first thing that comes to mind for me.
We'll hyphenate that so that we can make it one word.
So thank you. I appreciate that because yes, I could not think of one.
Well, listen, as you well know, advocacy is complex and has many different spokes to it. And sometimes trying to find what you think is the right word is not easy. And that's why I love asking that question because you get different answers to it constantly. And yours was one of those. What do you think will be the biggest challenges facing your members and your association in the future? Let's say 5-10 years down the road.
Well, I'd like to think that the constant battle over proper insurance coverage will somehow be resolved, you know, and that we're no longer fighting that battle. I think there is momentum behind that concept, but I certainly don't know how far we'll get. So, you know, down the road, I'd certainly like to say that a challenge and something we're figuring out is wrapping that effort. We want to make sure there is just simply no issue that when somebody needs medically, you know, designated care, that they get it. and that they don't need to worry about mortgaging their house or traveling across the world to do so. So really making sure that challenge no longer exists is something that I think we can accomplish by then. And I think just from a research perspective, collecting craniofacial care is vastly under-researched. I think that's going to continue to be a challenge into the future. ACPA, you know, we're a nimble organization. We're small. We don't fund research. I wish we did, but we don't. So I think, you know, again, that being one of those pillars of our current plan needs to evolve into something that we can be more actionable on. And I'd really like to see what research leads to in care. But there's also questions about understanding the causes of cleft and craniofacial conditions. There's new kinds of care and technology that can make things less invasive, that can make the care for patients less traumatic. So I think these are challenges that I don't have the answers for, but in the next 5 to 10 years, I'd love to see our industry really beginning to tackle.
I think that's a very noble goal. Personally, what is the best professional tip you've ever received for your career?
That is a great question. Do I only have to give one? Meaning I can only give one? It's a hard one to just give one, you know, Roger.
That's all right.
Let's see. I would say the first is obnoxiously cliche, but that's essentially to stick to being myself. I've always kind of balked at the idea of conforming to a look or the way that I talk or the way that I opine or anything like that to progress my career. I think over time, I've also realized that not everyone has that same, ability, for a variety of reasons. So it's been to stay true to myself and also to make sure that others have the same equal opportunity that I do, in terms of how I've kind of gotten to where I've gotten. So that's just really something I'm passionate about, something I mentor others about, and really how to navigate those paths. I'm unapologetically who I am, I guess you could say. And I think that's gotten me to where I am today. And then the other thing is to really care about your team. And that's just such a important thing that was shown to me early in my career by early managers. And I've talked about it many times. My early managers, you know, dealt with me as an immature, as I like to say, post-college idiot. And if they didn't give me that time of day to mentor me, to have patience, and treat me kindly and be, allow me to be who I was while pushing me, there's no way I would have been okay. So I really think it's important to give people that same time, to learn and to be coached and mentored, and to be kind. And that's what I believe in every day.
Adam, those are two very, very great examples. And I thank you for sharing those. When we were young, we thought we knew it all. And we thought we knew
did.
How we could get it done.
And I did not. I did not know it all. Let me just say, I knew nothing when I was
Well, but we professed to know things that we didn't know. Along the way, and put our foot in our mouth maybe one too many times. What's the biggest reward you get from leading this important community, ACPA?
I think for me, it's kind of a twofold thing. One is on the professional side, kind of speaking of the questions you just asked, the fact that I've been able to stay in a profession, which is association management. Certainly it's the nonprofit world per se, but the fact that I can continue doing what I enjoy, serving an organization like ACPA, is kind of the most unheard of thing for me. Like, you hear about it all the time. I wish I could do something I love, or I love what I do. I love what I do here. We're just the best organization. I sound so
it shows,
saying
Adam.
These things.
It shows.
Thank you. I was just on a call earlier talking to a couple potential speakers, and we had one of our program chairs on, and he came on after I had been talking, and I had told these people, I think you'll really experience a warm attendee base. Like, these are people who really care about what they do, and they choose to do this, and they're different than other healthcare professions. And then our program chair joined on, and he starts talking. He's I'm gonna share a few thoughts, and he goes, I think you'll really find our people are different. They could be doing other things. And I'm sitting there going, This is it. You know, everyone is aligned. It's just such a rare thing to have people so behind one common goal. You know, we don't all always get along perfectly. There's things to do better. We know that there's room for improvement in everything we do. But this organization is a special one, and I can just firmly say that I'm lucky to be a part of it.
Excellent. How can patients and families learn more about ACPA and particularly teen care?
Certainly, our website's the place to start, and that's acpacares.org. On the website, we have two sections: one for professionals and members, and one for patients and families. And while there are certainly resources on both, patients and families will find quite a bit of resources that they can use throughout their cleft and craniofacial journey, as well as they can use our Find an ACPA-approved team tool, amongst many other resources that we have on the website. Anyone can, of course, reach out to our organization at any time. We'll try to get them in the right direction, answer any questions that we can. We are certainly a team that believes in servant leadership, and we're here to serve when called upon.
Excellent. Any final thoughts? Anything you'd like to add?
I appreciate you having me on here, Roger. I appreciate anybody listening who might be interested in being an ally and supporting cleft and craniofacial patients and their families. It's something that really is life-changing, and the amount of progress that's been made has been fantastic here. We have a ways to go. So onward, and thanks once again for amplifying our own voice here on your podcast.
Well, you're more than welcome. And looking forward to your annual meeting in mid-April in Denver. So those of you that are ACPA members and have not registered yet, I highly suggest that you get on that right away. And that's a wrap of today's wonderful conversation with advocate and ACPA leader, Adam Levy, CAE. Adam, thank you for all you do and all the best.
Always good to talk to you, Roger. Thank you so much for having me on.
Let's face it, today's advocacy arena is just plain noisy. Organizations are stretched. You need every advantage to make sure your issue gets the attention it deserves and your voice heard. The RAP Index is the best way to do just that by finding your stakeholders' relationships and engagement power. Get past the noise. Know who your people know. Go to rapindex.com, that's rapindex.com, and tell them Roger sent you for a special offer. If you like today's podcast, head over to where you find your podcasts and subscribe to the Voices in Advocacy podcast. A big thank you to today's guest. I appreciate your time and the unwavering passion for advocacy you have. Well, that's it for this episode of Voices in Advocacy. Remember, you have the power to be an effective, influential advocate. Now go out and make it a better world.
We hope you enjoyed today's Voices in Advocacy podcast and look forward to you joining us again next week. To learn more about Voices in Advocacy, go to our website, voicesinadvocacy.com.